I just don't like you anymore. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast, where we are climbing the rungs of cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. I'm Zach Brooks, and for the 167th time, I'm joined by...
Oh, talking to me, are you? You, talking to me, Brendan Fitzpatrick. On this podcast...
Feckin' Brendan Fitzpatrick.
Feckin' Brendan Fitzpatrick.
Yes. I paused because I realized I misquoted it. I don't like ye no more, not any.
So, I wasn't going to correct you.
But... That's why I paused, and I was like, am I going to restart? Let's just roll with it. Last week, we talked about Forrest Gump, and this week, too, to a Jenny connection, and, you know, nice, simple characters and some others. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about the 2023 Academy Award Best Picture nominee, Banshees of Inisherin, also nominated for some other things, too. Mm-hmm. It is on HBO Max, so if you've not yet seen it and you're trying to do some Oscars catch-up homework and you want to listen to this discussion, because we'll be spoiling that movie, watch it on HBO Max and then come back and listen. Or if you want to skip ahead, there's the timestamp in the podcast description if you just want to skip ahead and hear what we're going to be watching next week. Because at the end of the episode, we'll decide our next movie based on suggestions sent in by the listeners and us, your hosts.
Of course we will.
Yes. I don't think it's a spoiler to say Banshees of Inisherin, Brendan's number one movie of 2022.
It was, and we'll find out during ratings if it still is.
Ooh, but, big news, yes. Yeah. This was your third time watching it and second time watching
this it. This was my third time watching this film. Funny story about the second time that I watched this film. It was Christmas Day, and everybody had been bugging me the night before at Christmas Eve dinner about what my favorite movie of the year was so far. And I said, well, it's Banshees of Inisherin. We could watch it tomorrow on HBO Max. And everybody was like really excited. They're like, yeah, we could totally watch it. Let's do it. And we all sat down as a family on Christmas Day to watch Banshees of Inisherin. And one by one, they all went upstairs to take naps.
One by one, like Calm's fingers, basically.
One by one, much like the people in this film disappearing from Padraig's life, yes.
Ah, yes, there we go.
Yeah, but the only one that stuck it out till the end was my mom, just out of respect for me, and I could tell she was not having a good time.
So you turn the calendar to Christmas Day and you watch this movie.
Exactly, yes.
So that's your third time, my second time. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think, like, combined five times watching a movie.
Five Timer Club.
I don't think there's... Oh, I guess Forrest Gump we probably combined and watched five times.
There's been a few of those, yeah.
I was like, oh, we haven't
Top
had
Gun,
like that.
Top Gun I've definitely seen more than three times, you know? Okay.
Never mind about that. All right. Well, speaking of things that you've seen, Brendan, you want to talk about the best thing you watched this week?
Yeah, there are a few different things that I could choose from. Thing. It's not the Oscars. The Oscars were fun, but a little predictable. The best thing I want to talk about this week is the episode 2 of The Mandalorian was really, really freaking good.
That's the best thing you watched
this week? I think that's the best thing I watched this week. Most of the movies I watched were pretty mediocre. We had a really great conversation about this week's Mandalorian 2 with LaTanya and Rich over at Pusha Recaps. I had a really good time with this episode. Some really, really cool stuff happens. Really cool visuals. Lots of big action in the episode as the titular Mandalorian goes to his quote-unquote home planet of Mandalore, and some wild stuff happens. If people aren't watching The Mandalorian, I mean, you know, it's season 3. I would say catch up, but if you're not watching it by now, you probably never will.
So. What percentage of our regular listeners do you think are watching The Mandalorian?
Half,
okay. Half.
Yeah, I would say half.
Yeah, I know Kyle King is.
Yeah, and Stefan, and...
I don't think Megan is. I'm almost positive Olin's not, and I don't think Jim is.
Stefan, maybe Jim. I can't remember. Yeah, I would have to ask him. Yeah,
I don't know. Interesting. Yeah, I thought it was just like a, I don't know, it's okay episode.
It's a really great episode, yeah. And I think it's really setting up where the season is going to go from here, so... Very exciting stuff, and, you know, I mean, the fact that I get to talk about it every week over at Pusha Recaps is just phenomenal, and I know that's a lazy plug, but I don't
care. Nah, that's not that lazy.
I don't care.
Yeah, no, you are allowed to plug things. All right. Yeah. I actually watched a lot of things this week. I'm kind of surprised. I didn't think I'd watch that much, but I'm going to talk about the movie that I finally knocked off my watch list. It had been one of those big blind spots. It's come up on this podcast a bunch of times. Maybe it'll come up on this podcast at some point. We end up getting to it. That is the 1944 movie Double Indemnity.
Yeah.
The insurance noir.
Turns out that's pretty good, right?
Yeah, yeah. It lived up to all the... I'm very glad it lived up to all the praise. You know, much like Banshees of Inisherin had lots of praise going into it, especially from you. So did Double Indemnity. And, you know, it's just like, it's not your typical detective noir, right? It's told from like a more of like this kind of murder plot from an insurance perspective. And it's really interesting to have that as the angle for this movie. You know, and just the dynamics and kind of like the different character motivations and you don't know where they're coming from. And it really felt like it set the template for like those noirs. I mean, it's not the first noir, obviously, but it just set the template that you see like in parodies of noir a lot. Like if you saw like a Looney Tunes parody of a noir, I feel like it would be based on this Double Indemnity.
Talk about a friendship that goes wrong too.
Yeah, that's true. And Billy Wilder, who just never disappoints any Billy Wilder that I've seen. Although I was not a big fan of Sunset Boulevard, but I saw it when I was too young to really appreciate it. So that's one that's on my like hit that one again at some point. And, you know, if we were doing this on the movie ladder, my number one suggestion would have been Strangers on a Train, because I think this movie is very much a parody of Strangers on a Train.
I agree. Yep, absolutely. It's very Hitchcocky and in a lot of its notes.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. So, good stuff. I'm glad that lived up to the hype. It would have been fun to get. That's one that, like, I wish, would have been fun to get to that on the podcast. But, you know, can't always schedule these things all the time, right?
You can't always get what you want.
Right. No.
You can try sometimes.
We do try sometimes.
So. Just when I find you get what you need, though.
Yeah. Why don't we talk about the Oscars? Were you satisfied with the result?
I was satisfied, but it also was kind of a boring Oscars. I thought Jimmy Kimmel was really funny in his opening speech. I was really happy for Everything Everywhere All at Once and Everything Everywhere of all of its wins. It was a pretty dominating performance. It was surprising that it won Best Original Screenplay. It won over some of the other nominees for Best Original Screenplay, especially this film, Banshees of Inisherin. I thought if this film was going to pick up a win, it would be here in Best Original Screenplay. But Everything Everywhere All at Once was just completely dominant. I mean, even the Jamie Lee Curtis late surge to win Best Supporting Actress turned out to be true.
Yeah, I bet on that one. I bet on that one Sunday morning. I was like,
I changed it to Jamie Lee Curtis Sunday morning as well because you had been hearing nothing but Angela Bassett for months. But there was like a late surge of Jamie Lee Curtis hype. I was happy with pretty much everything that won. That's the thing is it was a fine Oscars. There wasn't anything super surprising. It'll be interesting to look back and relitigate in Oscars this dominant and be where are the squeaky wheels?
Yeah, when you have a movie that picks up so many awards, it dominates like this. It didn't quite win the best five because it didn't have somebody nominated for best lead actor, although Kiwi Kwan probably
really is lead actor. He really is a lead actor.
He's not a supporting actor. Yeah. I rewatched the movie this weekend.
Yeah.
And what stuck out to me the most with that movie is while it wasn't my favorite movie of last year, I think it's very strong.
Yeah.
And from an acting and directing standpoint, and really from writing standpoint, that movie is balancing so many different movies all at once. Everything, everywhere all at once. Yeah. And so like, I do think, like, especially for the actors to have to be like switching performances and knowing what performance they're in, and for the directors to keep everything straight, like, I do think it's an achievement, and the Oscars are recognizing an achievement. So
yeah, and this is an impressive film, especially for a couple of first-time filmmakers with their first big movie, you know. Yeah. I mean, this is huge.
Hold on a second. I mean, they had Swiss Army Man.
Yeah, but this is like their first like.
Have you seen? I can't remember. Have you seen Swiss Army Man or not?
No, I hadn't. Okay. So, yeah,
it's not like the most impressive movie, but it is. After seeing this, you kind of it comes from a similar vein, where it's kind of combining that reality and fantasy. Well, so.
The other impressive thing to me is, I mean, think about when Everything Everywhere All at Once was released in theaters.
Yeah.
It was released the week after last year's Oscars.
Right.
So the hype for that movie built for an entire year.
Yeah.
Where it never really left the conversation for Best Picture after that hype started to build.
Yeah, so it's really impressive. So it's been out almost a year, right? I saw it almost a year ago, and my biggest complaint, I was tweeting about this, and I was tweeting with Grace about this. Like, I tried to watch Everything Everywhere All at Once the night before the Oscars,
and you can't find it. Yeah,
it's the only way to watch it is to have a Showtime subscription or to buy it for $20.
That's a pain.
And I think it's not good for the Oscars to have that, right? Because I'll sign up for a free trial of Showtime or for a month of Showtime or whatever to watch it. But the average person who you're going to have watch the Oscars is like, hey, here's this movie that's going to win basically every major award except one. Mm-hmm. But you've never seen it. Unless you're like into film Twitter and you're like an A24 person. I know Letterboxd has seen this movie.
But I bet you
that if you asked...
My mom has no idea what this movie is.
Right, exactly. Yeah. The average person who's watching the Oscars, they had not seen that movie, and they have no idea what the movie is.
None of my coworkers know what this movie is.
That's a good example. Yeah, your coworkers. So I just think, like, if the Oscars are, they're going to, I'm sure the ratings are going to be low for the Oscars again. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if they want to have people invested, they need to make it easy to see the movies that are nominated.
I agree.
The Whale is another example of that. I wanted to watch The Whale this weekend.
Women Talking was impossible.
There's not an easy legal way to watch these movies unless you shell out a bunch of money or like they are in some theaters.
Right.
But that's not, I mean, most people aren't going to go to a theater the night before the Oscars to see something that's nominated. Like, you need to make it easy. It used to be like you just go to the video store and rent the movie and it's not as easy to do that. So
yeah, I agree.
I think I'm going to keep banging that drum. I mean, the Oscars should just do like a movie pass type thing where you can pay like for some sort of streaming service you can watch all the nominated films on.
Yeah.
Like make a deal with the studios and have every movie that's nominated be available on some streaming service that you can subscribe to for a few months so you can catch up on everything.
Yeah, this was something else that really struck me about the Oscars. And, you know, some of the podcasts that I know you and I both listened to talked about this to a degree, too, especially Amanda and Sean over on The Big Picture right after the Oscars. Where were all the actual, like, Hollywood stars at this Oscars?
Yeah.
This is no longer Hollywood's biggest night. Like, think about, like, the amount of people who just didn't bother to show up. Tom Cruise, James Cameron, Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Leo wasn't there, Brad Pitt wasn't there, George Clooney wasn't there, Julia Roberts wasn't there. Like, all these big name actors were not there, and yet that's something that didn't used to happen. Now the people there are people who are nominated or presenting.
Yeah, honestly, that is not something I even noticed until they brought it up. I mean, I knew Tom Cruise wasn't there and James Cameron because they made a joke about it, which I thought was a pretty good joke.
It was.
But, like, I don't know. That didn't bug me. What I liked about the Oscars this year was all the montages of movies made me want to watch, like, when the Oscars ended, I wanted to watch, like, 50 movies. I was like, there's a clip from this movie, there's a clip from this movie. So, like, what I want from the Oscars is I want them to get me excited about movies. And I did think, like, the nominations, having the nominations list to, like, guide my watch list for a few months and having the montages and clips for movies that did actually end up making me, excited about movies. So, it's good to be excited about movies. The whole point of the Oscars is the film academy.
To get you
excited. So.
So I had an idea of how to shorten the Oscars a little bit and get people more excited about movies. Mm-hmm. Because people tend to zone out during Best Original Song. Mm-hmm. So the way you keep them invested through those original song performances is tie your movie montages to the performance of Best Original Song and have it playing in the background or in the foreground while the people are doing the Best Original Song.
Yeah,
the only one that wouldn't have worked for is Not You because of the dance number.
Right.
But the other four of them, they're totally could have been some kind of movie montage happening on the screens behind them.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Kind of cut into it. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Especially when it's for the movie that it's doing.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't think they were, I mean, they're long, but whatever. I watch them and I'm on Twitter and, like, you know, it's kind of a fun cultural event. I would prefer they not have the Oscars on the same night as Selection Sunday because I'm a little bit distracted with March Madness things.
Yeah. I mean, also this year was especially annoying because it was the same night as the Last of Us finale.
Yeah.
Which, luckily I didn't get spoiled on, but, you know.
I feel like every year there's some big HBO show that's airing on Sunday night. So if you have it on Sunday, you're always going to have it go up against something.
That's true. But they moved it. They moved it for the Super Bowl. They didn't move it for this, which was kind of weird.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know. Overall, I agree with you. It was kind of a boring ceremony. It started really strong. I thought the monologue and the first two, the supporting actor awards, were really strong, really good speeches. Mm-hmm. And then I was just kind of dull for a little bit.
But, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And I maintain 2022 was not a very good movie year. Like, I thought it was a solid movie year. I don't know. I think I'm in the minority with that. I really think 22 and 21 have not been great movie years. Some of that could be COVID related. Some of it could be movie theater and stream, you know, things going to streaming. It could just be the amount of things that stuff is just a little watered down.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of 2022 movies, should we just hop over to Banshees Inisherin?
Yeah. I mean, speaking of the Oscars, should we start with, you know, what happened with Banshees at the Oscars?
Well, yeah, since we're already talking about the Oscars, why not?
I think it makes sense. I mean, nominated for 9 Academy Awards, including Best Director, Best Picture, 2 Best Supporting Actor nominations for Brendan Gleeson and Barry Keoghan, Best Actor for Colin Farrell, Best Supporting Actress for Kerry Condon, Best Original Screenplay, as I mentioned earlier, Best Score, and Best Editing. I thought the Best Editing one was a bit of an outlier.
Yeah, it's kind of hard for me to judge what's well edited. I think that's such like a technical award. Is weird,
like,
but yeah, I mean, the editing didn't stand out to me one way or the other. Yeah.
The cinematography certainly did on this third watch. What a beautiful freaking film.
So it's funny because the first time I saw this movie, the one positive I said about it, because I really didn't like it the first watch, the one positive I said about it, and I said this in a group that I'm in with Olin, and as I said, well, at least it looked beautiful, and Olin disagreed with me. He said it looked dreary and drab.
No, it looked beautiful. Especially the opening shot is literally a shot of the greens, the mountains, and a giant rainbow over the island.
And so what I noticed this time actually is the light is like we start. And we're with Po Rick and and apologies in advance for all the names I'm going to screw up.
Podrick.
I don't think it's Podrick. The way they said it was Po Rick. I took note of that.
Podrick.
Yeah. I think the D is kind of silent. But he's walking and there's the rainbow that you mentioned in the background. Yep. It's bright and gorgeous. Sunny and happy. And then you see the sun a couple other times, but for the most part, it is dreary.
It starts to get darker and darker
as the movie gets darker.
Isn't there another movie we watched for this podcast where that was happening, where it was getting darker as the tone of the movie shifted?
Probably, but
I feel like that happened earlier this year, but I can't think of what the movie
earlier was. This year, because I was going to say, like, did it happen in, like, August Osage County, maybe? Or, I mean, if it was this year, maybe it was Treasure of Sierra Madre.
That might have been what it was. Yeah, that might have been.
I mean, that was black and white, but I think the movie did get that is a movie where things get darker as they go.
Yeah, for sure.
I definitely noticed. Like, I thought the cinematography looked good. I liked the way that we fly in to Inisherin and fly out of Inisherin at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it is pretty to look at, even if it's drab. And maybe if you live in Ireland, you're just like used to the look of Ireland. But to me, it looked like I really like the look of this movie.
I thought it was gorgeous.
Visually, it's one of the things that I really like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's other things that I noted, too, like just that we have when Colm is sitting in the confession booth and the light is coming in through the crucifix or the cross. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Crucifix, the cross on the carved out cross, and it's coming onto the priest's face. I definitely think the cinematography is good. That's an area where I probably would have given this award. The score, I don't know.
The score didn't strike me as much on this watch. It's a little interesting that it was nominated for score and for editing. Those are the two where I probably would have replaced those with the cinematography, like we're talking about. I think that,
The one thing about the score that I do think in this, that I did notice is just like the way it sets like the tension and the kind of darkness and mystery that starts happening. And for a movie where I think the tone is really troubling, the tone doesn't work for me at all. You know, I think the score at least sets that tone and kind of gets your mind, like, especially when in that opening scene, or not quite opening, when Po Rick is broken up with by Colm. And I think that the way the music turns, right, and the way the music turns when Colm won't go to the pub with him.
Should we sort of talk through the plot a little bit just quickly? I mean, basically, this movie is about two characters, Padraig and Colm, who are the best of friends. living on an island, the fictional island of Inishirin off the coast of Ireland.
So Inishirin's not a real place.
It's not a real place. It's a fictional island based off of the islands of Ireland that are off that same coast. But Martin McDonagh wanted to create his own sort of Brigadoon where this fantasy could take place. You know, actually, Brigadoon would be a good connection. I should write that down. There you go. So they are the best of friends, and one day Colm decides that he no longer wants to be friends with Padraig because there's nothing to do on Inishirin but drink and talk to each other. And Colm wants to create something that will last because he's a fiddle player and he's a musician, and he thinks that he can't accomplish being friends with Padraig and creating art at the same time. And so he decides that he has to end his friendship with the Colin Farrell character, Padraig, and says that every time Padraig talks to him from that day forward, he's going to cut one of his fingers off.
Yes. And I think, like,
things escalate real quick.
The premise of this movie and, like, some of the philosophical stuff is, like, pretty interesting, right? It's a breakup movie. It's about somebody who's kind of, like,
he's depressed. I mean, the priest says, "How's your despair?"
Right.
Like in the first confessional, Colm is a clinically depressed character.
He's depressed, but he's also having this existential crisis about, like, his legacy. Exactly. And it's something that I think, like, as all of us age, we think about, like, what is the legacy we're leaving behind? Right. And what am I doing? Right. What am I going to do? Yeah. I mean, Hamilton could be a really good, really good movie atlas for this movie.
Yeah.
And
is it enough to just be nice, or is it important that somebody remembers your name?
And I think, like, what I took out of this, because, you know, and that's his big hang up with Porrick, is that he's not that he's nice, and that's all he is. Right. And nobody cares if you're nice, and being nice does not leave a legacy. What I do notice, though, is being not nice leaves a legacy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we see that especially with the Dominic character, mistreated throughout the whole movie.
Yep.
And the legacy of the way that they treat Dominic is that he ends up dead at the end of the movie.
Yeah. It's debatable whether or not the Barry Keoghan character, Dominic, quote-unquote, accidentally falls into the lake at the end of the movie, or he was on his way to kill himself anyway when he ran into Siobhan, said, "Would you ever fall in love with me?" She rejects him, and it's that final rejection that leads him to throwing himself into the lake.
Yeah, I think that 100%. We see him in the background when she's leaving.
And he says to her, "I'm just going to go over there and do that thing I was going to do before I ran into you."
Yeah, no. I think that he's a character who is mistreated by his dad. Mm-hmm. He's rejected from Siobhan's affection.
Last nice person he thinks he knows is Padraig. And then he finds out that Padraig did this terrible thing to this random stranger. And he's like, "That might just be the meanest thing I've ever heard someone do."
Right.
Which tell someone that their parent is dead or dying.
That is, like, the only funny scene of this movie to me, is the bread van scene. It's a little bit like, you can kind of see it coming around the corner on like the bread van that killed his mom. But, like, I do really, it's, like, so random. And, you know, when we're looking at this as, like, a breakup movie, it is like, this is where he is. This is where he's jealous of this Declan character, like this young student who's spending time with Colm. And so, you know, it almost, like, it's funny, and it also doesn't really fit in this movie at all. It's like almost like a rom-com scene.
Yeah.
And this movie is really not funny other than that scene.
See, I completely disagree. I think there's a solid 45 minutes in the beginning of this movie before he starts actually chopping off his fingers, where this movie is really darkly funny. Where just Padraig just can't understand why Colm doesn't want to be friends with him anymore. And there's all this back and forth between Colm and Padraig and Siobhan, and Siobhan and Colm and Padraig and the bartenders. And it's hilarious.
Yeah. None of that to me. And, you know, I'm not trying to, like, rain on your parade.
No, I totally get it. Like, it doesn't work for everyone.
None of it is funny. And the whole time, like, I get that they're on this, like, isolated island and there's really nobody else for them to hang out with. But I'm just like, and that is a depressing thought.
Also, it's frustrating, too. Yeah. Like, it's a frustrating thing. Like, it's what Siobhan says. You're all dull and boring.
Right.
We live on a freaking island. There's nothing else to do but fucking talk to each other.
Right. So, and And that's where, like, Calm is in denial of this life that he is in, like,
exactly.
And, you know, and we'll get into kind of some of the metaphors going on with, like, the Irish Civil War going on across the water, which obviously maps onto this movie. But, like, Calm ends up, like, cutting off his nose despite his face.
Literally,
when he cuts off his fingers. And that really, like, before then, I'm like, wow, this is a really dark movie. And it's like, why are they friends? Like, why does he care? Like, I'd just be like, you are not fun. I don't want to be around you. I, like, if I was Paul Rick, I'd just be like, okay, fine. You don't want to be around me.
But
I don't
really want to be around you. He used to be nice. Or maybe you never were. And that's, like, the huge thing. Like, am I just an idiot? And you never really were nice.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
no, and I take it as, like, Calm woke up one day. And sometimes you do. You wake up and you have these, like, you know, where something comes to you. I can't think of the word, like, which is ironic. Where you just wake up one day and you're just like, oh, like, this clicked for me. Like, I want to make a change. I want to not do this anymore. I want to do this. And, like...
Mm.
He just suddenly had this thing. Maybe it came to him during a dream, right? I know sometimes you have a dream and it really changes your mindset on things. Mm-hmm. Not you, but, you know, one.
Yeah,
no,
the world.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to quit a friendship?
Probably. I remember I had one friendship in middle school, and we were really good friends. And we're like, kind of, you know, we're like Facebook friends and stuff now. Like, we're cordial with each other. Like, there's nothing wrong. But it's like, we were really good friends in seventh grade, like, best friends. And we would, like, we watched wrestling together. We always get all the pay-per-views. And, like, he's a, you know, big sports guy. And, like, we just had a ton in common. And we just sort of, like, okay, so I will get into, like, the stupid thing that made me break up the friendship. and I was at camp in seventh grade. And, like, this is, like, the height of my, like, obsession with wrestling, right? And I was like, I have to know, like, what is going to happen. And then, so this was in the, you know, this was, like, 98, 99?
Right.
You know, so this is, like, the Attitude Era, like, intense wrestling.
God.
And so I went to
wrestling
camp.
Was fake?
No. And I asked him to print out the reports of what happened on Raw and mail them to me while I was at camp so I could stay up to speed on what happened in wrestling. And, you know, so my compulsion of entertainment has not changed since I was
little. No, it has not. It's hilarious.
And he didn't do it. And
of course he didn't.
So then I kind of ended the friendship after
that. When you're in seventh grade, out of sight, out of mind with friendship, when your friend is off at camp, you go find other friends and do other things.
When you're in seventh grade and you don't find out what happened on Raw last week, it is very upsetting.
It is very upsetting. It is very upsetting. I'll spoil it for you. Mr. McMahon came out and cut a promo on Stone Cold Steve Austin. Stone Cold came out. Jim Ross yelled, "By God, it's Stone Cold!" And then Stone Cold came to the ring and threw beer all over Mr. McMahon. That's probably what happened.
Yeah, no. But I feel like for the most part, when I've been older, I mean, you and I had a roommate that we had to break up with, kind of. And I actually did have to have that, you know, I had to have the, like, you need to move out discussion with him because it wasn't working for the three of us living there. And I, you know, the conversation probably actually wasn't that different than this, where he's like, well, what did I do? And it's not, you didn't do one thing.
It's not one thing. Yeah.
No.
You ain't done nothing to me. You ain't said nothing to me. I just don't like you anymore.
Right. Yeah. No, it was just, living together is a little bit different, but that also comes to mind. But then I think for the most part, like other friendships that as you get older, you just kind of grow apart and you kind of quiet quit the friendship.
Right.
It doesn't have to
be. I mean, that's different. Like, I mean, I had a friend from college that I had to stop being friends with because the friendship was unhealthy in, like, a serious way, where they were, like, basically not a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the opposite of Kodrick in, like, every way, where they were just straight up not a good person and constantly, like, it's hard to describe. They were just not a good person, and I had to just cut this person out of my life because I realized that me continuing to associate with that person made me an enabler to their bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't do that anymore. And it was starting to not only make me look bad to my other friends that I was continuing to have this person in my life because they were such a deplorable human being at that point in time. And also their life and the things that they were doing in their life was becoming a mental drain on me because I was their only friend and I was the person that they would call day and night trying to talk about all their problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do that anymore.
Right, and that's where it's a little bit different. Yeah. I mean, that is a lot different than this, right? Where this is a negative energy versus somebody who's trying to do the best and trying to be positive, and you cut them out. And I think that, you know, I think I do like the choice to make Paul Rick like a nice person he's done, like there's nothing that he's done wrong. There's nothing you can point to. It's just like we just have different mentalities right now at this point in our life. And, you know, it really does map onto like a breakup. You know, like a romantic breakup, because when Colm is interested in Paul Rick again is like when he's being a jerk to him, when he's negging him. Yep. Right. Yep. So
is it enough to just be nice, Zach? I mean, that's the crux of this.
I think that question is so much more complicated than this movie or Forrest Gump really make it let on. But I do think like, and you know, this, I feel like this is a discussion you and I have a lot, because you are like, Brendan, you do pride yourself on being a nice person. Like part of why you like this movie so much is because I think you probably see a lot of yourself in Paul Rick.
I absolutely do. Yeah.
Yes. I think the discussion you and I have is like,
he's calling him Poe Rig like he's Poe Dameron, but other than that,
Olin will
correct
this.
It's Podrick.
We'll hear from Olin.
Like Podrick from Game of Thrones. Yeah.
That's how it's spelled, but they pronounce it Poe Rig throughout the whole movie. I took note of that.
That's because it's their accents, I tell you. It's the accent, I tell you.
Yes. Okay, well, whatever. I'm trying to honor how they pronounced it. but I do think, like, you and I have this discussion a lot where, like, you do things to be nice, and I'm like, well, yeah, but like don't step on your own, you know, don't cut your own, don't harm yourself to be nice to somebody else, right? Like, don't go out of your way just to be nice.
Don't go out of my way to take care of my brother's dogs when I don't really want to.
Right. Yeah. Don't let somebody walk all over you just so that you can be nice. Like, don't use being nice as an excuse for letting people push you around.
That's
right.
Fair. Yeah.
And I think, and I mean, I have the same thing, right? I do it at times too, where it's like, oh, sure, I'll do this thing I don't really want to do just because I'll be nice. But then I end up like complaining about it and not being happy. It's like, well,
who's and I mean, I do too. I complain about it, but mostly only to you.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, well, whose choice was it to be?
Which is the good normal chatting.
Yeah.
Good normal chatting, bro. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's, I do think the idea of like, you say you're, you know, are you in your heart nice? Right. And maybe that's the other question about Patrick. Like, he says he's nice. He thinks he's nice. But the things that he does aren't very nice in this movie. He burns down his friend's house.
Given the opportunity to try to get one over on Colm by telling this guy that his dad got hit by a bread truck. I mean, that's like, you know, and Dominic's like, that's the meanest thing I've ever heard. Like,
and I don't think that's the meanest thing I've ever heard. I think it's kind of funny. The guy's going to, I mean, I guess it's really sad. The guy's going to, there's no way for the guy to find out for a long time that his dad is still alive. So, you did cause him a lot
really
of stress,
awful.
I guess.
And
you know, whereas Colm is mean to himself, he self mutilates. He's not mean. I mean, he's not nice to Paul Rick, but he doesn't do anything to Paul Rick.
Right.
He does things to himself, which unintentionally harm Jenny, the donkey that Paul Rick loves so much.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
And that's another part of this movie that I really did not care for. And I don't usually get upset about animals dying in movies, but I really see my mom's dog Moses, who I'm really close with, in Jenny when I watch the movie, more so than in the dog.
Yeah.
And seeing the, like, if that would have happened to, like, I just like was
it's
so
disregard. It's the disregard. And that's what like is the most upsetting thing. Yeah. Is that, and that's sort of what the movie is commenting on it as well, is like, yeah, you can be mad at this person and end the friendship with them, but your anger and your selfishness doesn't just affect the person you're mad at, affects all these other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not you deciding to do this affects more than just the one person that you're being angry with.
Well, and it's the thing that, like, nobody would think, right? Nobody would think that by him cutting off his fingers, he's going to kill a pet.
Right. And that's the whole, that leads to the whole Civil War metaphor as well. Right. Like, where all these innocent people get killed and hurt and ruined, their lives ruined with war, whether they were actually involved in the fighting of that war or not. Mm-hmm. That's the metaphor.
Because of the Civil War, because of the attempt of breakup, you know, like the, and I was trying to like kind of do a little restudying of the Irish Civil War history, and it's just, you know, this is where it's, we should add all on
go rewatch Michael Collins, right, and come back to us, you know. That's our second movie map.
Michael Collins and Hunger, right, so we can get some Irish, we can get the 20s, and then we can get the war,
the later
stuff. 60s. I did like that this movie starts in late March 1923. So it is,
we're at the 100-year anniversary.
Almost exactly 100 years, right?
I'm glad we're doing this. Yeah. And it's St. Patrick's Day week, by the way.
St. Patrick, yes,
Sláinte to your health.
I was the Guinness or whatever. They probably weren't drinking Guinness, but whatever the beer they were drinking, the pubs looked so good.
I know. I wanted really to go get a Guinness, then I was like, but I haven't even eaten dinner yet, so.
Yeah, I was too lazy to go out and get a Guinness.
Yeah.
I also, on my first watch of this, did not realize that Poe Rick thought that it was an April Fool's joke.
Yeah,
and that I identify with that because I hate April Fool's so much. So that was good.
Yeah, because you get that clue, you get that like hint to it the night before when they're at the pub and Dominic comes back in and the bartender says, you know, you're not, we don't take your kind in here anymore, and he's like, you only kicked me out through March. It's not March anymore, is it? Mm-hmm. And so you sort of get a hint. And then when, you know, Padraig wakes up the next morning and looks at the calendar and flips it to April, he's like, oh, it's been April. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to talk about a couple other things. I want to talk about the motif of death in this movie, because I think there's a lot to talk about with that.
The titular banshee of Inisherin.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The title and the memory of this movie is dedicated in memory of one of Martin McDonagh's friends as well, or somebody in Martin McDonagh's life. I don't know who it was. We also haven't done the box office, so we need to do that. And we were talking about kicking things off with a voicemail from Olin. So I think we start with the box office, then we'll play Olin's voicemail, and then get into some of the death and some of the other things. So this movie debuted in October 21st of 2022, but just in four theaters, and was, you know, number 18 that weekend. The top movie, do you want to, well, you probably know, the top, did you see what the top movie was that
I
weekend?
I looked, but I don't remember what it was anymore, like, after I looked at the links. I try to forget it so that we can have this conversation.
The number one movie that weekend, on its first weekend, before people knew that it sucked and stopped going to see it,
Black Adam.
Yep.
Yeah, now I remember, yes. That movie is so bad. I watched that a couple weeks ago. Oh.
Also opening that weekend, Ticket to Paradise. So it was a real big weekend for terrible movies coming.
So hey, people liked Ticket to Paradise. It just, you know.
Oh really? Oh, I don't. Yeah. Okay. Other notable: Smile, Halloween Ends, because it is Terrifier 2. It is right before Halloween. And a bunch of other Best Picture nominees: Tar, Triangle of Sadness, Top Gun: Maverick were all ahead of this all in the box office. After Sun was number 22, also opening in four screens. So this and Banshees both opened on the same number of screens. Nice. Banshees of Inisherin made $250,000, and After Sun made $90,000.
After Sun's so freaking good. If you want to see a Best Actor performance, go watch Paul Mescal in After Sun.
After Sun should have been nominated over probably Triangle Sadness, just because it's kind of similar.
Triangle Sadness is so bad. I mean, it's not awful, but it didn't deserve to be Best Picture over The Menu. It does a lot of the same stuff as The Menu, and I thought The Menu was better.
Yeah, and tighter and things like that. Yeah, I agree with that. I think Triangle of Sadness being nominated for Best Picture is like a very good symbol of just the weak movie year of 2022. Because it's like, that's a movie that was nominated for Best Picture. Like, it's fine, but it's one I'll never think about again.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right. So this movie then went wide.
Babylon should have been nominated. Sorry. Go ahead.
This movie went wide, 2 weeks later, October 28th. And it was at 58 theaters. It was up to number 13. It was up to 18 on that opening weekend. And I'm just looking to see if anything changed. Nope. Still Black Adam and Ticket to Paradise is the top two movies in the theater. So.
Yeah. It peaked at number 7 in its third and fourth weeks before like starting to fall again.
Okay.
So
I feel like this is more of like, this went to HBO Max pretty quickly, and I think this is just like, this is just one of those, like, in the age we're in, this is a movie that's not going to do well in theaters.
I mean, it hit I believe it didn't even like do the Christmas HBO thing. I think it hit the first weekend of December on HBO Max.
I watched it in January on HBO Max, but I think it had been on there for a while.
It was actually kind of hard to find on HBO Max. Like, I had to go searching for it.
I was surprised they
probably because I had already watched it twice. But
that's what I wondered, if it was because I had already watched it. But you would think that they would have their best picture nominees like up front and center.
Yeah, you would think.
Yeah. So that's kind of box office stuff. I think there's, you know, there's streaming stuff that came out the same weekend too, but that's kind of too hard to track with box office. How about I read my initial review for this movie, and then we'll play Olin's review.
Yeah.
So it's always fun when I have a rewatch I have a review of. So I said, this movie certainly evoked an emotional reaction, but man, that was feckin' depressing. And I'm doubly bummed that I didn't get out of this what everyone else seems to enjoy. Mm. I guess this is the consequences on everyone when a loved one has a self-loathing existential crisis. Mm-hmm. Colin Farrell was really good, especially in the opening scene when Calm breaks up with him. He had great facial reactions throughout. But really, why would he want to be friends with Calm in the first place? Beautiful setting, which Owen disagrees with. Go. And then I ended my review with this was the state of mind I was in because I had just finished the Harry Potter movies. Mm-hmm. Taps Mike, Mad-Eye sure was moody. That's what I put at the end of my review. Of course, Brendan Gleeson, who plays Mad-Eye. What are the performances? What do you think of so we've talked about Colin Farrell a little bit. Like, what about Carrie Condon's performance?
I think she's fantastic. I mean, I like totally get, and I, as much as I relate to Padraig, I also relate to her frustration with these two people who just aren't getting along, and is like, you're both idiots, mm-hmm, to a certain degree, and like all there is to do on this island is talk. So the fact that you don't want to talk to each other is just stupid, mm-hmm, you know, and it's just like she wants to have a life outside of the stupid island drama of Inishirin and doesn't feel like she can leave when all of this is going on and finally does.
Right. I was going to say, and she actually like chases, you know, she actually chases her dream. She's kind of like an interesting counterpoint to Calm. Calm wants to have. He has these grand ambitions, but he doesn't want to do anything. You know, he wants to write music, but he doesn't want to leave or anything like that. Whereas she's ready to leave, and and she goes. Yeah, I thought she's a good presence in this movie. This is the first movie that I've really kind of like noticed her, and I've seen her in other things. She's in Three Billboards. Mm-hmm. She's in some of the Avengers movies. I think she's one of the the AI voice for Spider-Man.
Right.
I'm not super familiar with her before this movie.
I wasn't either.
Yeah. I do think Colin Farrell is really, really good in this.
I
totally understand his nomination.
He had three good movies this year he was really great in After Yang.
Mm-hmm. Not
After Sun, After Yang. Really great in this. He was in the Ron Howard Thailand disaster flood movie 13 Lives.
Oh, he was.
Which I haven't seen yet.
Oh, I didn't realize he was in that.
He's in that. I haven't seen it yet. It's been on my watch list forever. Mm-hmm. That might be when we do Water Disaster in a couple weeks for the Library Ladder Challenge. I think that's the movie I choose.
Yeah,
for a Library Ladder. Mm-hmm. Is 13 Lives.
Yeah.
Because I watched the documentary for that, and it's really, really good.
Well,
But I love
Colin forgetting Phil. You're forgetting one other movie from last year.
Oh, duh, the Batman. He was
freaking the Penguin.
Because it's hard to remember that's Colin Farrell behind all that freaking makeup. And he's fantastic in the Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a really, really good actor. I like him
a lot.
He's
had the most interesting career,
he
right?
Really
he
has.
Had like that early 2000s where he was in Daredevil and Minority Report.
And trying to do a bunch of action movies. Yeah.
And now he's in he's in some of these independent films, but then also is in the Batman and Fantastic Beasts.
Exactly.
Yeah, and he's always, he's been in three out of the four Martin McDonagh movies as well.
Yeah, so. He's always making interesting choices, for sure.
Yeah,
I like him a lot. Brendan Gleeson is just a really solid presence whenever he's in a movie. I mean, he's just a really, really good actor.
I do not like him in this movie, but I don't think you're supposed to. But I think the biggest problem I have with him is he has no charisma in this movie.
That's hard to
and be. So I'm like, if the movie's all about Podrick being upset that Calm is no longer friends with him, my big takeaway both times I watched this is like, who cares, don't be friends with this guy, he sucks. But I did really like seeing Brendan Gleeson at the Oscars, and I think I texted you, I said, I just want to give him a hug. He just is like such a huggable actor.
Was really cute because Colin Farrell was there, Brendan Gleeson was sitting two seats over from him, and in between the two of them was Colin Farrell's son. Mm-hmm. And that was just really cute that they like brought Colin Farrell's son, and he's sitting between these two great friends, you know, who have been in other movies together, you know.
Right. Yeah. Did Colin Farrell show up on Brendan Gleeson's SNL performance.
Or great question. Hosting. I don't recall.
I think he did show up, but I watched it a while ago. All right, and then the last one, Barry Keoghan, which Olin did send me a way to pronounce
Barry's last name. I believe it's Keoghan, yeah.
Yeah, it is Keoghan.
Yeah. And people used to always say Barry Keoghan, and I had to be corrected on that, yeah. Barry Keoghan. He's a really interesting actor. He's made some really interesting choices with his career. He's one of the few bright spots of the Eternals movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I really like him in Eternals and his weird cult-like character. He's really good at this. I mean, really weird, but good.
He's just like forever a teenager to me. Like, I see that he was born in 1992, so he's 31 years old. Yeah. But I just feel like he's a kid. And I think that kind of works. Like, he feels like a kid in this movie, which is why which is why Kerry Condon's character...
He's in that other Colin Farrell movie, too, right?
I was just going to say that's why Siobhan, kind of works that Siobhan doesn't want to be with him because he's kind of like a kid. I just forgot.
I think it's really funny when he's like, when I'm your age, and it's like, but you're never going to be the same age, bro.
He's in Killing of Sacred Deer with Colin Farrell, but he's also really in the Batman as well. Yep. So he plays spoiler for the Batman, but he has barely in it.
Let's
but
just he's the Joker.
He has a cameo at the end. Yeah, I think it's been a year. We can spoil it. So,
I think it's strong. I like everyone around the town. The lady who plays the titular Banshee, Mrs. McCreary, is really
creepy
and good. I mean, she's there. McCormick, not McCreary. We can go back to this. We were talking earlier about the final scene between Dominic and Siobhan when they're at the edge of the lake. And I didn't pick up on this the last time I watched. I did pick up on it this time. But before Dominic enters the frame and surprises Siobhan on the edge of the lake, you see Mrs. McCormick on the other side, on the other bank, like beckoning to her. And this time I kind of realized she's not beckoning to her. She's beckoning to Dominic behind her.
Because she's like the precursor to death.
Yeah.
And she tells Porrick during this movie that death is coming for maybe two. And he says, that's not nice. And so we get this nice thing again.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm not trying to be nice. I'm trying to be accurate.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And she reminds me a lot. And, maybe this will come up. But reminds me a lot of the witch from Macbeth.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Like, totally could be based on that character. You see her a lot, like, at the fork in the road.
Exactly.
She's just kind of there, right? She's just kind of this,
she's there. She's the last person we see at the end of the movie as we zoom out from Colm's burning house at the beach. She's sitting there watching everything that just happened.
In between the two of them. Almost like the referee.
In between the two of them. And in the chair that was inside the house the last time we saw it.
Chair. And kind of above them, like an angel of death would be.
Yeah, exactly. And she's in the chair that was in Colm's house the last time we saw it. Yeah. So it's like, how did she get that chair?
Right. And I do think, I was thinking about the title, right? Inisherin obviously is the place. And Banshees of Inisherin, it's the name of the song that Colm was writing, but also the idea of a banshee, which is a very loud, screeching noise that is a precursor to death, right?
A banshee is a ghost or demon from Irish folklore that pretends death.
Right. With a loud noise.
Yeah, with a loud noise that shrieks. Yeah, the shrieking of the banshee.
And I think that what I really like about, this movie is hard for me because I do not like this movie. But I like a lot of what it's trying to do. I just don't think it's successful. And what I like about this is this movie is all about silence. This is all about Colm not wanting. And every time that Porrick talks to him, he cuts. He mutilates himself and he harms himself, right? Because he just wants silence.
Yep.
And it's a banshee banshee is the opposite of silence.
Mm-hmm.
A banshee is a loud, loud noise, right? I think that is a very interesting choice to have this movie be about banshees but also be about silence. And Colm wants silence. He wants to sit silently in his house, but he does want music, and music is not silence.
That's the thing, is every time he leaves his house, he leaves the record player on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the other thing. It's like, oh, you want silence, but you're blasting your gramophone.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you're not home to hear it.
And speaking of noise and precursors to death, we do hear the bell tolling a couple times, yeah. The clock chiming. When we have that really good scene where Colm and Poe Rick are face to face inside Colm's house, and Poe Rick says, you know, I'm not here for licks, and nine fingers is the epitome of that mental. That's a very good scene. And then they seem like they've made amends at that point. Mm. They're talking, and Poe Rick says to Colm, do you want to go to the pub? And then the bell chimes, and it chimes twice. And it feels like that's almost like that sound reawakens Colm, where it's like, no, never mind. It also
seems like he was willing to do it until Podrick put his foot in his mouth and told him about what he did with the student from the mainland.
Mm.
And that sort of changes Colm's mind.
Interesting. I think it's that he offers to go buy him the beer. Because that's a nice thing. And what Colm wants is Colm doesn't want him to be nice. And so I think he doesn't mind that he did this thing with the... I mean, maybe. It's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah, it is hard to tell. Yeah.
But I do think that clock chiming is like for whom the bell tolls, right? It tolls twice, and then it tolls... Porter goes to the pub, sits there by himself, and then we hear the clock toll four times.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's almost like we're hearing the clock... you know, we're hearing
off each of his fingers that he's
hearing the Banshee of Inisherin two different times, one for Jenny and one for Dominic.
Yeah. The other thing is, like, this is a movie where I really wish that we did sound clips on this podcast because I think that it's hard to explain the back and forth and the important conversations that are happening in this movie without, like, sound clips. I mean, I know people have watched the movie.
Hopefully.
But, like, I really want people to go back and listen to that first scene with Colm and Podrick when they're having that conversation. And then the other one, you know, when Podrick has that break, when he's drunk off of whiskey and starts yelling at the cop and then yelling at Colm in the bar. Because he's like, it should be enough to be nice. I'll be remembered because I'm nice. Right. Nobody's gonna remember all these names that you think are so big and fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you can't even get the dates right.
Right, and then he talks about Mozart and he has the wrong century.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah.
I think that's an interesting point. It is like an interesting philosophical discussion and debate. And that is the scene that like made me be like, oh, this is why Brennan likes this movie so much. Yeah, like that one scene.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, speaking of liking this movie, why don't we want to find out how
feedback. Let's get into some feedback.
So it'll just take me a second to share my audio.
You better feckin' like it.
Better feckin' like it, Olin.
Talking to us, are you, Olin?
All right, I'm going to play Olin's voicemail now, and you get to hear some true Irish accent from The Irishman.
Inevitably, a rewatch for me, just as Zach would recommend. He is nice like that. Anyway, more than holds up, plenty of laughs, good characterization, sure. A profound dealing of loss, grief, isolation and despair, where some men's only form of therapy was to go to the confessional. Anyway, as Brendan says, I am a bit of a cynic, so he got me there. This time, though, the allegory of the Civil War and war in general really firmed up on the rewatch. And sure, I'm a sucker for animals. Ah, poor Jenny. At least Pollock was able to find some solace in his pony and his cows as well. My favourite of the main Oscar films I've seen for this year, but sure, fair play to Everything Everywhere all at once. But if I have one gripe, sure, tis with my hero of the movie, Kerry Condon. I mean, she was great. Fucking terrific. Are the Academy gums or what? That was one that should have been taken off all Everything Everywhere all at once. One more thing. The barman and his main buddy, sure, they were part of a major Irish comedy duo in the 90s. Dumbelievables. I mean, they were okay. Better than Saturday Night Live, anyway. But sure, if we can't be better than SNL, might as well all give up. 4.5 stars.
All right. We got an Irishman. We got his dog.
I love that the dog is barking in the background. It's fantastic. It's funny because the dog in Calm's house is so silent through the whole film.
That's true. It almost felt like a spirit to me, not like an actual, because it doesn't really interact with anybody, right?
It's his heart. Yeah.
Yeah. Do we ever get a name for that dog? I don't think we do.
Just your dog.
Yeah. And I am trying to remember the name of Olin's dog. I know it and I just can't remember.
That's good stuff. I don't know. I would have to rewatch Everything Everywhere All at Once to see if I agree about the Jamie Lee Curtis versus Kerry Condon thing, but I think they're both great.
My vote would have gone to Hung Chow from The Whale. I watched The Whale this weekend and she is spectacular in that. She's better than Brendan Gleeson. Brendan Fraser. Yeah.
Okay.
Olin's accent kind of sounds like Brendan Gleeson's accent to me a little bit.
Yeah.
Olin did bring up something that I want to talk about, though, and that is my whole rewatch theory, which is that, like, it's, you know, I kind of go back and forth on how to phrase this, but I do think it's very hard to form an opinion on a movie if you've only seen it once, because I think you need to see a movie a second time to know where things are going, and you can, like, with this movie, for example, the first time I was watching, I had no idea he was going to cut off his fingers, and Jenny was going to die, and kind of where the story was going to go, what we were even in for, what the tone of the movie was. And so I do think this movie, like most movies for me, grew on the rewatch. I did appreciate elements of it on the rewatch more than I did on the first watch. And I mean, we don't have time to rewatch everything. Yeah. And yes, there are movies that are just bad. But I think even bad movies, if you rewatch them, you can find things that you would appreciate. And maybe movies that you like, you rewatch it and you realize there's parts that are really boring because you kind of know where it's going. And I think there's a different type of appreciation on rewatching a movie versus the first watching a movie.
For sure. And I mean, especially like a third time watching a movie, like I didn't feel bad about sort of like chatting with you while I was watching this movie and taking time to take my notes and everything without feeling the need to pause, because I like had the beats of the movie ready to go and nothing really surprised me throughout the movie except for like little things that I caught. But like this is a movie that held up incredibly well for me. But I don't tend to rewatch movies a lot that are movies like this. Like, I'll rewatch, like, a Marvel movie several times. I've rewatched Thor Ragnarok, like, half a dozen times. Mm-hmm. But a movie like this isn't one that I would necessarily tend to rewatch.
Right. And those are for me. I mean, and that in this kind of the same way as you, but for me, a lot of the movies that I'm like, oh, I should rewatch that are like these movies that require a little bit more, like, because there's so much symbolism in this and metaphor and, you know, the idea of death, like just stuff that is like hard to pick up on the first time you're watching when you're just trying to figure out like what is going on in this movie. Why is this guy cutting off his fingers? Why are they no longer friends? Things like that. And I have a movie in mind. In my suggestions that actually is similar to this in that I didn't appreciate it on the first watch and I would like to give it another visit. Another version of that, which I'm not going to be suggesting, is No Country for Old Men, where I didn't like it on the first watch and I've been meaning to rewatch it because I'm sure there's parts that I would pick up on a second time. So I'm glad Olin called that out because I did want to make sure I mentioned that.
Nice. And also he mentions the comedy duo that are in the pub. A lot of people mentioned that, like, after the movie came out. They're like, they're this famous comedy duo that nobody's ever heard of. I'm like, all right, great. That's cool. That's a cool Easter egg for Irish people.
Are they, like, in the band when Colm is
No, it's is the conducting? Bartender and his the bartender and his sidekick. The one that's, like, shush-like. Yeah, shush-like.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah.
All right, well... you know, maybe someday you and I will go to Ireland and we can sit at a pub and have a Guinness with Olin and his whiny little dull arse. So, all right. Shall we get into the rest of the listener feedback?
Yeah, let's do it. All right. See where this takes us.
Listener feedbacks. So we got Olin's voicemail is 4.5. I will read Mega the Librarian, who says, I thought I would enjoy this, but wow, I really did not. I just can't deal with brick wall characters like the one Brendan Gleeson plays. Mm-hmm. Reminded me of Sweetie and that I was hoping he would just die. It's kind of surprising, he like with all that blood loss, he doesn't die. But I guess
The one part that I keep bumping up against in this film, actually, is the second scene after he cuts off all his fingers and he's at the pub bleeding all over everything with not even like a wrapping around his hand. And he's just OK. It's a little that's sort of the fantasy element of this film that I bump up against a little bit, because like it's like, okay, we understand the metaphor, we get it, but you're kind of pushing it a little too far into fantasy land of metaphor,
right? You know, and that's where it's like, I get what they're that's kind of the way I feel about this, right? Where I'm like, I get what they're trying to do, and I kind of appreciate what they're trying to do, but it doesn't really work. And I do like the idea that he's cutting off his fingers on his fiddling hand, so like he is taking away the one thing that he says he wants, which is this legacy to create music, because he's so angry with Calm for what he thinks is holding him back. So
I think
you know, if you look at this as kind of like a Shakespearean fable, right, where you have like the angel of death over that and things like it's very Shakespearean, I feel like. So, all right, Megan continues. If there's going to be a character so completely over the top, inconsiderate and cruel in the film, there needs to be something to balance it, or else it's too frustrating to watch. Mm-hmm. At least that's how I feel anyway. And I am in complete alignment with Megan on that point. I see a lot of reviews calling this comedy, and I would agree. In Bruges was very funny. There wasn't a single solitary moment that I found even slightly amusing here, though. I do understand that there are, quote-unquote, or I guess like squiggly line, themes at play. It wasn't exactly subtle, and that's nice, but it doesn't redeem such a thoroughly unpleasant viewing experience. 2 stars.
Ouch.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes Megan writes reviews. And she's so much better with words than me, where I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what I was trying to say, and I just didn't say it that well. And so a lot of what she says, especially on my first watch, I agree with.
That's why we like having her on.
Yeah. So 2 stars for Megan.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing about this, Zach, is that this is a film that where I understand the criticism, and I can't really argue with it. Mm-hmm. But because I get it. But my reaction to it is different than I understand and accept the criticism of it. But I think a lot of the things that people are critical of are also reasons why I liked it. And that's kind of weird, you know, because it's hard to articulate that.
It worked for you and it works for Olin. Right. And I see another listener who it's going to work for. And, you know, for me and for Megan and for some other people, like it just didn't work. It didn't land.
Right. But
I appreciate the swing it took. It struck out for me.
It's also really funny because this movie, you were kind of in the minority of people saying that they weren't jiving with it when it first came out. And now the, you know, Banshee's backlash has actually gotten louder than the people who said they appreciated the film. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I think there are a lot more people coming around to yours and Megan's side of the discourse. Mm-hmm. As this movie has gone into streaming and the mainstream populace is starting to see it. I mean, my family walking out on it one by one on Christmas Day as we started watching this film is a good example of the, like, you know, juxtaposition of this movie hitting for probably a very small number of people.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at what was nominated for Best Picture, too, there's a lot of unpleasant movies that were nominated.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, Everything Everywhere is really good, but it's you know, a tearjerker.
People said upsetting, they
cried. But All Quiet on the Western Front was not a fun watch at all. Yeah. It is very dark. Banshees is a dark movie. Tar is a pretty dark movie. Triangle Sadness, dark movie. Women Talking. So half of the nominees. And then you have Elvis, Top Gun. And Elvis is like enjoyable depending on who you are.
Right.
And then Top Gun and Avatar and everything.
How dare you talk about my boy?
Yeah. And I feel like even Fablemans is like a typical Best Picture drama.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, not. I don't know if it's a habit. I mean,
there's
I guess
some upsetting happened. Stuff that happens in Fablemans too, though. I mean,
So it's just, I don't know. I just think like this is almost a good year for like, they should go back down to 5 movies nominated for Best Picture.
I think that's fair. Yeah. I think this movie still gets nominated if they do, but yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Probably. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it does. All right. Oscars
aren't the best movie of the year. It's just a good,
time. Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah, we've had that conversation.
We do. I know.
All right, Alex O says, I have more than one rating for you this time, as I was visiting my parents this weekend, and they were wanting an Oscar movie to watch, so I recommended Banshees. I wasn't there to watch with them, but they both said after that they didn't really like it. I mean, I think my mom said it was stupid, and my dad said he didn't like the ending. But earlier today, I asked them what they would rate it out of 5, and both independently said 3.5 out of 5. Technically, they said both said 7 out of 10, ignoring my ask, for a rating of 5 stars.
Well, luckily so, they didn't say out of like 20 or something.
Yeah, I appreciate the extra math, Alex. I truly do. It definitely made things easier for me when I was doing the averages. So I guess they both sort of came around on it, Alex continues. Meanwhile, I came at it from the opposite way because I mostly enjoyed it while I was watching it, but it didn't really stick with me, and I don't think it's a film that I would seek out to rewatch all the way through. So I end up also at a 3.5 out of 5. So that's 3.5 from the Alex O family.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yes. The whole O family given
the whole O's.
Yeah. Given it 3.5. Yeah, I think like that's interesting. I feel like his parents might just be great inflators. Where they're like, I didn't really like it. 3.5.
Fair. Hey, I do that all the time.
As a fellow grade inflator, I totally understand.
As a fellow grade inflator, I appreciate it. Especially considering some of the ratings for, you know, for this movie. I you know.
Is this just like, this is such like a film Twitter film, I feel like. Where like, if you're just the average movie watcher and you watch something, I feel like you're going to be like, you're going to be let down. Especially when it's marked as a comedy. Like, I think even Three Billboards is a much more approachable movie than this. I don't think this is a very approachable movie because it's so metaphorical.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well,
what does Professor Jim have to say?
Professor Jim, the smartest man in the room, he won your Oscar prediction contest.
Damn right he did.
Yeah. As I told you, I wish I could have bet on Jim to win the Oscar prediction.
I know. We should have had a side hustle going.
Yeah, we should have.
How
many people entered that?
There were 20 people entered in that.
Nice.
Yeah, number so one, it was nice. Yeah, nice. It's a good crowd.
Yeah, I filled it out and I totally forgot who I picked in anything.
Yep. That's why I sent the link the morning of so people can follow along. Yeah.
All right. So Jim says The Banshees of Inisherin was a great movie. I had hoped to watch it on the big screen this week, but Tiz was not meant to be. The movie is a fable that takes its time getting where it's going, and it packs a punch along the way. The acting is excellent, and the scenery is starkly beautiful. Plus, Jenny the Donkey is going to inspire many people who really shouldn't own a donkey to give it a try. 5 out of 5 from Jim.
Nice.
And his hero of the movie is the Greens of the Aran Islands and the Archil Island.
Yep, there you go.
Yes. It is a fable. And we are the Fable Men this month, apparently, because it's our third fable in a row, Brendan.
We like a fable.
I mean, I guess Forrest Gump's a fable, right?
Forrest Gump's a fable, yeah.
Yeah. So it's too bad we didn't do this in February. We could have had Fable-wary, where we had Curious Case, Benjamin Button, Forrest Gump, and Banshees of Inisherin.
March, is that something? Fable March?
Fable March, the March of the Fablemans?
March of the I don't know. Yeah. Let's not. All right. Your brother wrote in. Aaron Brooks says, I understand it's a biting commentary on companionship and aging, but it also tries to be comedic throughout, and I just didn't stick with it. Respect what it's doing regardless. 3 stars from your brother. Yeah, and that's totally fair.
He said he didn't click with it. I just want to be, because stick with it makes it sound like he gave up. He
click with it. Yeah.
He didn't click with it.
What did I say? Stick?
You said stick. I thought it said font small, it's fine. I'm in much alignment with my brother. Not always, but pretty lined with his review. Yeah. And I think after the first time I watched it, I texted him. I said, that was Banshees of Inisherin. He said, yeah, it was kind of just an average movie to me.
Yeah. Has your brother ever made you so mad that you wanted to cut off your own fingers?
No, I can't imagine. It's the idea of being so mad at somebody else that you want to harm yourself. Like, that's a
weird
concept.
Yeah, it is a weird concept.
It does feel like that's almost like you aren't actually mad at them. You're mad at yourself. Like, you're punishing yourself, right? And that's probably,
depression and suicidal tendencies are. What depression is.
Yeah.
You know?
It definitely is you're watching an on-screen depression and the effects on himself and other people and the effects that he didn't mean, right? That he kills a donkey and...
Yep, exactly.
I don't think his actions lead to Dominic's death. I don't know if you could relate, Pat.
Not specifically, but it is a ripple. It's a butterfly effect.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because without what Calm does, without what Calm does, Podrick doesn't do what he does to the bread guy, and then the bread guy, then Conjuring doesn't have to tell the story to Dominic, and Dominic doesn't, you know.
Yeah, if you think of that as being the inciting incident for Dominic killing, I always think of, like, Dominic did that because of what his dad does to him.
Well, I mean, it's a factor. There are more than one. Yeah, yeah. Everyone, I mean, suicide, there's never a single answer for suicide.
True. Yeah, yeah.
You know.
And I think that's where this movie might be trying
to. It's a culmination of things.
Trying to do too much, because that, like, I get what it's saying about suicide, but it doesn't really, I mean, I don't know, it just doesn't quite, it's not.
It's still at a distance. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And I had something else I was going to say, and I forgot, so we will just move on. All right. We got more. All right. This is what happens when we pick a Best Picture winner.
I know, right? We have nine ratings this week.
Nice. Max says, I'm not always on the same wavelength as McDonough, but Colin Farrell is wonderful, and Banshees should win the Oscar for Best Visual Effects based on his eyebrows alone.
Wonderful.
And I know Mac did say to us separately, I'm just going to say this, he won't care if I share it, but he said he could not believe Barry Keoghan got nominated, and he said that the Academy should watch the Simple Jack sketch from from Tropic Thunder, because that's what he feels like the character was doing.
Oh, man.
Ouch. Do you feel like Dominic is kind of a good track onto Forrest Gump? I guess we could save that for connections. But.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it is a good track on it. You're also kind of supposed to draw the Podrick parallel as well to Gump, but yeah, I mean, it's there are certainly parallels there. Yeah.
Yeah, Dominic seems more low intelligence than Podrick, and it's kind of like, Calm is to Podrick, or Podrick, so you're getting me all screwed up. Calm is to Podrick as Podrick is to Dominic, right? Like, it's
Podomerican?
Yeah, where, like, Calm lets Podrick down, and Podrick lets Dominic down. All right. We got one last email that came in very late.
Right. Three stars from Mac, by the way. Yes. Kyle King says, a slow burn of a movie that's almost more fun to discuss than actually watch it.
Agreed.
But I really do love it. I love the scenery, the acting, the accents. It's all so charming. And I love the mundanity of this little island life where people have nothing better to do than pick fights with their friends. I do believe this is an allegory for the Civil War, fighting over nothing against loved ones. But it also touches on the finality of life and what matters. Being nice is enough.
Ooh.
4 out of 5 stars for
Kyle on Team Nice. All right.
Yep. 4 out of 5. I'm also on Team Nice.
Yeah. I do really like the moment at the end, which is it's the poster for this movie when they're standing on the beach and Calm says, oh, there hasn't been any gunfire in a day.
Yeah.
And it's like the war is over and their war, you know, has started to heal, right?
And he says, thanks for looking after my dog. And that's,
And it's like that in the moment where Calm picks Podrick up after the cop beats him up.
Yeah.
And like takes him home and gets him back to the fork in the road.
Yep.
And then they split again. But that's like the part where you're like, if you're Podrick, you're like, oh, this guy does still care about me. He's just going through some shit.
And that's the mixed message that this film has also, because throughout this movie, there are little moments where they do, even after Calm says, don't talk to me anymore, they do talk to each other and try to work through this, and it doesn't happen. So, like, if I'm Podrick, I kind of understand the want and the desire and the prompt that he's receiving to not give up on his friend, because his friend does keep talking to him and little things keep happening that show that indicate that Podrick, the Calm, might still want to be friends, such as him picking him up after the cop punches him, or when he finds out what Calm said after he left the bar, after he insulted the cop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Calm
is like, that's the most interesting he's ever been. And when Podrick finds that out, he's like, oh, there's still a chance for us to still be friends.
And that's the relationship breakup aspect of this, right? Yeah. Where you see that in relationship movies too. So, all right. Well, speaking of friends, what did our friends average out to?
All right. It is a 3.556 from the listeners. 3.556.
Yep. I'm going to go first because I think there's a little bit of suspense as to how you end up. I know you were 5 stars, but I do want to find out if this was still your number one movie of 2022, blah, blah, blah. All right. I came into this as a 2.5, closer to like a 2.25. But I totally agree with Kyle that this is a much more fun movie to discuss than to actually watch. And so this discussion did bump me up a little bit. So I'm like 2.75. So I will give it a 3. But I'm like slightly below a 3 if I had to be fastidious. So, you know, I get why this works for some people. Five star for Jim, and four star for Kyle. Like, I think it looks great. I just think, like, and I like what it's trying to do. Like, this movie is taking a lot of swings, and I just don't think it, like, lands all of these swings for me. And I don't think it's a very enjoyable movie. But I do think there's a lot to talk. I mean, clearly, we're an hour and 15 minutes in, and we're still talking about this. I mean, you know, I know we had some preamble, but, like, we've been talking about this movie for a long time. We haven't even gotten to connections yet. So there's a lot to dive into with this movie.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a movie that, as soon as I saw it, I knew it would be a lot of fun for the two of us to talk through on the podcast, no matter how we felt about it.
Do you think you would have enjoyed this discussion with me more on a first watch or on this rewatch?
On the rewatch. On a rewatch, for sure. On a rewatch, for sure.
I think I'm a little bit more open to this.
I think I would have been a lot more defensive. Whereas on my third watch, I can understand the seams of the movie. I can see the seams in the movie and why people don't like it. And, you know, like I said, I don't necessarily disagree with a lot of the criticism, but I mean, honestly, I laughed more the third time watching this movie than I did the first few times.
I just don't get it.
At some of the humor.
I'm glad that you find it funny.
I find a lot of the little beats and the little sidelines and the little banter between these characters really funny and delightful. In the first hour of this film, until things start getting dark, things go from awkwardly funny to just dark as soon as that first finger hits the door. And that's when things stop being funny in the movie.
That noise is like haunting. Also,
it is. Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, I was just gonna say, I think, like, going back to, you know, if this was the first watch or the rewatch, like, I think I'm glad that this is a rewatch for me for this discussion, because I think I was really upset by this movie after the first watch. It might have been a more raw reaction after the first watch, but I think on the rewatch I was able to actually, like, appreciate aspects of this, even stuff that I didn't necessarily.
I think,
like,
I would have been sitting here trying to tell you you're wrong, or you telling me I'm wrong. And that's no good. Yeah. You know, it may have actually ended the podcast.
And I do think, like, idea of, like, you're holding me back from doing something great, this friendship is holding me back from doing, I don't think that's the case with this podcast, but there is, like, a world where it's like, hey, this podcast is a lot of time and I need time to be doing something else, right? Like, and that happens, right? Podcasts break up all the time. There was a podcast that I really, really liked that just broke up and had a podcast divorce because of money. And it is hard to have a podcast break up, both as a listener or when the show breaks up. So
I'm just glad that this didn't end with any of us cutting our fingers off on the mic or ending the podcast.
Or killing each other's pets.
Definitely not that.
All right. What's your rating, Brendan?
All right. So this was my number one movie of the year. My top five for 2022 were Banshees, Top Gun Maverick, The Northman, RRR, and Marcel the Shell, which she's on. Five really, really great movies. Five very different movies.
Yeah, for sure.
I still think this is my favorite movie of the year.
Cool. All right, that's good.
Top Gun Maverick, I could see putting over this as actually being the best movie of the year that I saw. But I still think this is a five-star movie for me. And I, despite the flaws that I see in it, that I could knock it down closer to 4.5, but I'm not going to. Nothing is perfect. But this movie works for me on a level that I can forgive the things that are kind of ridiculous about it, like the fact that he's just sitting there bleeding all over the bar, you know,
the
night. The fableness of it. And it's very dark. In fact, I think there are actually original Grimm's fairy tales where shit like that happens.
Yeah.
Like, in order to get the slipper to fit in the original Cinderella storytelling, the wicked stepmother in Cinderella cuts off her daughter's toes and heels to try to get the slipper to fit on their feet.
All right. Well, we need a dark Cinderella to come out.
We could watch Into the Woods next.
Yeah. So
where that happens.
Okay. Interesting. It's
still a five for me.
I'm looking at my top five. It's great. We've already hit two of the best picture nominees from this year. not the winner, but two of the nominees. We had Top Gun Maverick
and two of my favorite films of the year.
Yeah. And we also, you know, for the, we do disagree on some things, but we have three of the same five in our top, on our top five. I have The Northman at number one, Everything Everywhere All at Once at number two, RRR at number three, Top Gun Maverick at number four, and After Sun at number five.
Nice.
After Sun, a movie I did not like the first time, and on the rewatch, I loved it. So just goes to show you.
Well, guess what? It is a, my five helps get us to a 3.852 overall, which bumps it to a four overall for the purposes of Letterboxd. Are you surprised by this?
No. I mean, I think this, you know, it's kind of a polarizing movie. I'm sure we probably, you know, if we got a couple more emails, then we probably have some lower scores and some higher scores. So I think that's about right. Have you seen all of the Martin McDonagh, like the four main Martin McDonagh movies?
What's the fourth one? I've seen three of the four.
So Three Billboards, Banshees of Inisherin, In Bruges, and Seven Psychopaths.
Oh, yes, I have. I've seen all four. Yes. I've seen Seven Psychopaths. Saw it from a movie ladder 2 years ago for the personal ladder. In Bruges, I've seen, and Three Billboards, I've seen. Yeah,
do you have a ranking off the top of your head?
Probably In Bruges and this are very, very close. Seven Psychopaths is better than Three Billboards. Three Billboards is fine. Yeah. So Three Billboards, fourth, then Seven Psychopaths. Then In Bruges, than this.
Yeah, but, I do remember liking Three Billboards, and that's the only other McDonagh I've seen, but I couldn't really tell you much, like, what I did or didn't like about it. I think the tone worked a little bit better in that, but, you know, In Bruges, never seen, and you're saying that you like it. Maybe that's what we're going to end up doing next week.
A lot of people, Alex, a lot of people will tell you that In Bruges is better than this.
Okay. Well, we'll find out. It was funny. Last week when Alex was listening to the podcast, he messaged me and said, I am 5 minutes into this podcast and you've already said four movies that might be the choice for next week. Okay, I'm glad that we have some teases out there.
Good.
So, all right. We are going so long on this. That's all right.
Though. I know.
We'll keep moving along. All right. Here of the movie. I will go first. Colin Farrell. I think he's very, very good in this.
I'm going to give it to the island of Inisherin. I'm going to give it to the island, to the Irish
island. Irish island of Inisherin. I can't believe it's not a real place. I just assumed it was.
I know. Like Brigadine.
Yeah.
All right.
Connections. So connections to last week's. Of course, we have a character named Jenny. We have a simple, a nice character, or a couple simple, nice characters. I was going to say people with different worldviews, like Colm is kind of more on the like Lieutenant Dan side of the world.
Exactly. The destiny. And this is my destiny. This is, I have to have a legacy. Yeah. It's the whole legacy thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Legacy is what you leave behind when you're gone. Yeah.
Well, and there's things that Forrest leaves behind in Forrest legacy, Forrest Jr. You know, the money that he leaves for Bubba's family, the church and things like that. Sure. I also put the seaside setting of, although of course, like we had like the golf coast. Okay.
Yep, the Gulf Coast. And,
but we do have clips or like shots of Forrest and Forrest Jr. sitting on the, you know, sitting over the water and things like that.
Yeah. We did talk earlier about all of the Oscars that this didn't win, all nine of the Oscars that it didn't win, and all of the Oscars that Forrest Gump did last week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, multiple Oscar winner and loser comparison, you know, Oscar nominations for both.
Oscar, and then one other thing that I picked up on this one was dismemberment.
Yeah,
so Colm loses his fingers, Lieutenant Dan loses his legs.
Yep, there you go. Nice.
All right, and now title connection, which
I forgot. Carrie Condon also, she's a librarian and is really obsessed with reading. Forrest Gump and Jenny throughout the film are reading. They're very big readers.
Mm-hmm. The whole they do say throughout this movie, like, what are you going to go do, read, or like things like that. Yep. Like they reference reading a lot in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sure. All right. So before we started, we had said title connection. What are we going to do for title connection? We both had ones and we both said, well, they're kind of spoilers. So why don't you give yours first and I'll give mine next.
Mine is just a simple Jenny didn't make it.
Mine was Jenny's third act grave, because in both movies we see the grave of Jenny in the third act of the movie.
Do you want to just say Jenny's third act?
Jenny. I also thought like a non-spoiler version could just be Jenny as a friend.
My friend Jenny.
Yeah, my friend Jenny. I think that's kind of like my friend Jenny.
Well, how about my Jenny?
Well, I think my friend Jenny is kind of a Forrest Gump in like simple way to phrase that, like my friend Jenny. So
I
think
I like my Jenny.
My Jenny, but it's
not even a friend.
It's a little like controlling, right? It's a little like
wow. Okay.
I don't like my Jenny. It's like, sounds like it's like property, even for Donkey.
You killed my Jenny.
And like my friend Jenny, because it's
friends. My friend Jenny. Yeah.
Even though they become more than friends in Forrest Gump. And it is so sad when Jenny dies. It's just like unnecessarily sad.
It is very sad. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Connections to other movies from this year.
Let's see. We have
I'll do a couple.
The Mountains, The Mountain Vista. We have
Relationships Over Time. So this movie I did suggest after On Golden Pond, because you have the grouchy character, the grouchy older character. So yeah, both On Golden Pond and also Benjamin Button kind of tracked Relationships Over Time. And obviously 2022 movie nominated for Best Picture with Top Gun Maverick. And Into the Wild was also nominated. And was I can't remember Treasure Sierra Madre was, but On Golden Pond was nominated though. Benjamin Button was nominated. So lots of, and Forrest Gump. So we've had lots of, we had more movies nominated for Best Picture. We've had at least half of our movies have been nominated for Best Picture this year. More than half.
For sure.
All right. Any other connections? I mean, you know, being out by the water, we've had a couple times, like Pollock and Treasure Sierra Madre.
Yeah, nothing super struck out to me on this watch, aside from just, you know, general thematic stuff.
Treasure Sierra Madre took place in the 1920s, in 1925.
Yeah, that's also true. And Pollock takes place around this time a little bit, as well in America, and also deals with an artist trying to leave behind his legacy.
Yep, there you go. That's good.
So that's pretty well between Colm and Pollock.
And as we're talking legacy, you know, Into the Wild,
And he destroys all his relationships in Pollock, too. So.
Yeah, cool. We've connected everything. Good job.
There you go.
All right. Movie map.
I mean, there are two super big, obvious ones. We mentioned Michael Collins earlier. It takes place during the Irish Civil War on the mainland instead of on a remote island. You know, they reference the events that are happening in Michael Collins in this movie. With the whole, like, it's everything has sucked since we started firing at each other instead of against the British. And then you also have The Quiet Man, which takes place on mainland Ireland as well. And it's, you know, Colm is imploring Padraig throughout this film to be the quiet man.
That's like, Quiet Man is kind of the opposite of the being quiet. I was gonna say Michael Collins. I think that makes the most sense. I was trying to think if there's anything that's like a good like breakup-ish movie, and the only one I could really think of was like Worst Person in the World, maybe. But I think and the island setting, Berkman Island, is kind
of. We had a lot of conversation about, you know, who the worst person on the island is, worst person in the world, you know.
So
there you go.
All right, one last thing. Finally.
My one last thing is I'm done talking about that she's with Sharon for a while. I think I'm gonna go have a beer.
I did like when the cop is talking about how he's gonna go over and do the execution. And he says some Free State lads are executing some of the IRA lads, or maybe it's the other way around. I don't really care. And it's like,
he doesn't care. That's the conversation Colm wants to be having. Instead of like good normal chatting, like that's
well, and just like how these people do not care about the Civil War going on, like the gunfire going on across the water. All right. Well, that is The Banshees of Inisherin, and a 4 overall, 3.852. And I think we've hit everything. We did not forget our title connection this week. So,
good job.
Now it is time to go on to our ladder rung segment where we pick our movie for next week based on suggestions sent in by the listeners and ones that we brought as your hosts. So we do have ones that we will start off with. Megan, the librarian, who teased us earlier this week and said she had a really good suggestion. Set the bar high, Megan, the librarian.
I just thought of something before we go to Megan, the librarian. I apologize. Yes. A connection to Into the Wild. We have a brother and sister writing letters back and forth.
Oh, nice. Okay.
There you go. Sorry. All right. Now I'm done.
That was worth interrupting. All right. Megan the Librarian starts with Cold Mountain, 2003. Brendan Gleeson plays the fiddle in a film that takes place around a Civil War.
The American Civil War. Yes.
Next one from just the year before, Gangs in New York. Irish people be fighting on the periphery of a Civil War again. Brendan Gleeson co-stars and the main character loves someone named Jenny. Oh, wow. Ooh. That must be her good one. And of course, this is
Scorsese. Is this our Jenny month? I think it's going to be Jenny month.
Jenny June, Jenny July, if only.
George.
Oh, God.
I'm not doing that anymore.
That is a horrible. That's like one of those words that like moist that just makes you cringe. All right. And Megan the Librarian taking one off of my list, off of a couple people's lists. Killing of Sacred Deer, Colin Farrell and Barry Keoghan in a film that some sickos might consider a black comedy. This movie is highly disturbing. Brennan, have you seen Killing of Sacred Deer?
I have.
Okay. Yorgos Lanthimos, somebody who my brother loves and just his movies usually, they're okay, but they just don't click for me like they do for me.
I really like Yorgos Lanthimos. I remember just being like, wow, this movie is fucked.
Yeah. Killing of Sacred Deer is my favorite Yorgos movie, and I feel like people who like Yorgos don't like this movie.
Yeah, it's the favorite is his best.
Yeah, see, I don't like the favorite was like Beatrice in a Shirt, where I'm like, why is this nominated for so much stuff? I do not get the love.
Because it's hilarious.
Yeah, see, and the humor is totally lost on me.
I think it's just like you don't like foreign humor. That's what it is.
Could be.
You're a what's the word I'm looking for?
American.
Yeah. Patriot? There you go. Yeah. Whoa. Hey, buddy.
Yeah. Find me on Truth Social after this.
fuck.
All right. Alex O has another Brendan Gleeson film, Calvary. This was on my list as well. This was another film with a strong bond between a person and an animal. Okja.
Yeah, came up last year after Quiet Man, I believe.
Calvary's come up a ton. Because it's one of the oldest movies on my watch list. It's like the third movie on my watch list, I think, on Letterboxd. It's like goes all the way back. So. Okja was his second one, which I did see that a long time ago before I went vegan. So Bong Joon-ho, Okja. It's a Netflix movie.
Yep.
Tilda Swinton's in it. And lastly, another film with a deteriorating central relationship, Scenes from Marriage. Yes, that came up a lot last year when we were doing Bergman movies. Sure. So, all right. Jim Crumley has Moby Dick. Oh, interesting. I just watched The Whale. There's lots of references to Moby Dick. Another movie about obsession and friendship between men, partly filmed in Ireland. As recounted by screenwriter Ray Bradbury, director John Huston struggled with the production and the results were epic.
Yeah, I believe Gregory Peck is the titular Ahab in that.
I have never read a Moby Dick, and I'm not going to read. That's too long of a book. I'm not reading Moby Dick, I don't really know much about Moby Dick, but The Whale references Moby Dick a ton. So you might be doing The Whale in 2 weeks, which is a movie I don't really want to rewatch, but, the ladder requires it. All right. Aaron Brooks, my brother, has Killing of Sacred Deer for the Barry Keoghan performance. Of course, also Colin Farrell is in that. And some sickos might consider it a black comedy, as Megan said. The Witch for an important animal performance with Black Phillip. And finally, Shrek, because it has a donkey.
Yeah, I thought about Shrek. Yeah.
2022, big year for donkeys in film, especially Oscar nominated.
So, I mean, freaking, you know, Shrek maps pretty well onto Brendan Gleeson's calm when you think about it.
Oh, yeah, like, he's angry,
Doesn't want to be friends with the donkey.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
just wants to be left alone.
Interesting, all right, well, yeah.
Just wants to be left alone.
He is a little chubby, and they make fun of Brendan Gleeson's weight in this. They call him chubby in this movie, so.
Chubby fiddle players.
I did ask Shut Up Tim, because he's, like, the biggest Shrek fan on Twitter. Yeah. And, I said, you know, there are all these donkeys in Oscar-nominated films in 2022. Did the donkey show up in Puss in Boots? And he said, just briefly, but the donkey does. And, of course, there's a donkey. EO is all about a donkey. And Navalny, the documentary, which I watched this weekend, there's a donkey in that as well.
Oscar-winning documentary Navalny.
Yes, Oscar-winning. Very good documentary. You know, you don't watch a lot of documentaries, but I did like that one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Olin has Olin, whose voice you heard earlier, Calvary. Brendan Gleeson in A Confessional. Yep. That was the exact thing that I wrote down. The Guard, Grumpy Brendan Gleeson in Some Despair, co-stars Don Cheadle.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan's Daughter from 1970, the fourth David Lean epic film is set in rural west of Ireland during the Irish Revolutionary War era. In fact, that is the David Lean epic that I never hear about.
Yeah, for sure.
Finally, The Field from 1990, examination of toxic masculinity around sensitive souls in old rural Ireland. Richard Harris is starring in that.
Nice.
And Kyle suggesting another one on my list, In Bruges. He says, I need a reason to watch.
I believe that we are required by law, whenever you say In Bruges, to say In Fucking Bruges.
In Feckin' Bruges. Is it Feckin' or Fucking? Yeah. Feckin'. Okay. Nice. And I'm sure, you know, if we had Jim to do the, like, there are this many connections between In Bruges and Banshee of Inisherin, like 50 people.
Yeah, so. I'm sure. Yeah.
All right. On to the host suggestions.
Yeah.
I have to reorganize my list because a bunch got taken off. So, but I go first. So I got to take In Bruges off. Got to take Calvary off. All right. So the first one, I mentioned this one earlier, a 2023 Best Picture nominee that I didn't appreciate on the first watch and want to revisit. We had Qualm conducting, and he's an artist and cares about all his legacy. Yep. So the TARDIS.
The TARDIS.
Just TAR.
It is just TAR.
Yeah.
Avatar.
Yeah, it's not Avatar, but just TAR. And I know, well, I do know where that one is streaming. The next one is a movie called Intermission. This shows up on Colin Farrell and Carrie Condon's filmography. It is directed, and it's John Crowley's debut feature.
Interesting.
And I just saw on Twitter that John Crowley just announced he's going to be making a movie called We Live in Time, starring your guy, Andrew Garfield, and Florence Pugh Pew Pew. So,
Pew Pew.
Yeah.
Nice.
So Intermission is on my list. Is next on my list. Yes, I actually have a lot of movies on my list to go through with, but I'm not going to do that many. Paddington 2. We just did a very sad, you know, upsetting movie to watch. Why not do what I've heard is like the most uplifting movie? We have Brendan Gleeson in that. Mm-hmm. We have Hugh Grant, who just had some, you know, made some waves at the Oscars. And I will promise that if we do Paddington 2, I will also watch Paddington 1, but we will only be podcasting on Paddington 2, but I will watch both.
Fair. I'm a completionist. I hold you to that.
Yep. All right. We just talked about Yorgos. We have Killing a Sacred Deer. Why not throw The Lobster on there? I think the score is very similar to The Lobster too, in both movies, and Colin Farrell is in both. And it's a movie that like is this dark comedy that really didn't work for me the first time, but it has a lot to dive into when it comes to relationships and animals. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a very good connection. So that's four. And I'll do one more. How about a movie about breaking up? I have three movies about breaking up on my list. And I will do the one that people say is funny, and I have not seen the humor in it. This is an American movie that I don't see the humor in, but people say it's hilarious. So let's revisit it. Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
I knew it. I knew that was going to come up. Really? Yes.
Okay. And I have
another Jason Segel movie on my list.
Ah, nice. Okay. I have like eight movies that I didn't suggest.
My first suggestion, I'll start with that one then. Let's go with I Love You, Man.
Ah, okay. I thought you were going to say the five-year engagement.
Classic bromances on film. Let's go with I Love You, Man. Jason Segel, Paul Rudd, Slapping the Bass.
Yeah, doesn't Paul Rudd do like an Irish impression in that too? Like a very bad Irish impression? Yes. Like a leprechaun or something? Yeah.
Yeah. Here is a movie that a lot of people thought was going to get nominated for Oscars and didn't get nominated for anything. My understanding is that there is a fraught relationship at the center of this film. It came out in 2022. Stars Anthony Hopkins and a bunch of young actors. Armageddon Time. I feel like there's a connection.
Sort of. Not really.
Sort of? Okay.
It's about a friendship. About a friendship.
All right. And then I will do two Irish films. Darby O'Gill and The Little People. Obviously.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And wasn't then, Max supposed to submit something?
Yeah, I thought he put it on here. Did he not?
No.
Okay. Well, he did
not. We'll read it after you finish. Yeah.
And Waking the Divine is another one.
Add that on my list of my honorable mentions.
And then for my fifth, I'm going to go with a feel-good movie about friends in Ireland trying to put a band together and make wonderful music. You're my beloved, your brother's beloved, Sing Street.
Sing Street.
That's going to be my fifth. So there you go.
Well, and if only we had done The Commitments recently, that could have been but that's like your movie Matlas. So
yeah, it Street. Is. All so right. Also ran Angela's Ashes, Far and Away, Secret of the Kells, Belfast, After Yang, Minority Report was it also ran for me.
Oh, nice. Okay.
That's about it. Yeah.
Yep. I speaking of Minority Report, I had Phone Booth and Miami Vice for kind of that era Colin Farrell, the New World. Which is the kind of where he's like John Smith, the Pocahontas retelling. Cassandra's Dream, which is a Woody Allen film about brothers who turn on each other, starring Colin Farrell. EO, because of a movie about a donkey that was nominated for Academy Awards. Blue Valentine and Eternal Sunshine for breakups. All right. And I just checked. Mac did suggest Darby O'Gill, but he said he was trying to think of a connection that isn't Darby O'Gill.
Yeah, so exactly. So that's why I didn't write it down.
Cool. All right.
It wasn't official.
Yep.
All right. Let's take it from the top and see what we're going to be doing next week. All right. We have Cold Mountain, Gangs of New York, Killing of a Sacred Deer, Cavalry, Okja, Scenes from a Marriage, Moby Dick, Killing of the Sacred Deer Again, The Witch, Shrek, Calvary Again, The Guard, Ryan's Daughter, The Field, In Bruges, In Fucking Bruges, Tar, Intermission, Paddington 2, The Lobster, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, I Love You Man, Armageddon Time, Darby O'Gill and the Little People, Waking Ned Divine, and Sing Street. I get to go first. Zach, from your list. Whew, it's tough. There's a couple things on your list I haven't seen, a couple things I have. The fact that you haven't seen Paddington 2, and it's one of the best movies of a couple years ago, I'm gonna put Paddington 2. And hopefully we can find it streaming. So yeah, I'm gonna take Paddington 2 from your list. What you got?
All right. I will go off of your list. Just because it was on mine, I will do Waking Ned Divine, which in America is just called Waking Ned.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So, I remember seeing this movie, speaking of, like, the video store. I remember seeing this movie at the video store and not knowing what it's about. And I think it's about, like, an Irishman. It's got that seaside Irish setting. Yep. And it's about an Irishman who they're having, after death. It involves death. And I think trying to break up his possessions or lottery winnings or something.
Yeah. There's a whole plot about a lottery ticket. Have you seen it? I saw it back in the 90s. I saw it with my grandfather.
Okay.
Remember really liking it. It's a movie that he really liked.
Okay. Cool.
I believe it's the first movie that we got my grandfather when we got him a DVD player.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised there's not any cast connections between the two movies, to be honest. Yeah, but
that's true.
So it's called Waking Ned Divine or Waking Ned.
There are a lot of interesting ways to go off of listener connections. I mean, Calvary has come up so much, and so has Gangs of New York. I actually feel like we could do Gangs of New York, but Calvary's been on my list for so long, but I don't know if we want to watch another depressing
Brendan. I don't know what it is. Yeah, that's so I think I think he plays a priest who's taking revenge on people, I believe.
Fear of the Unknown is a little... It's holding me back a little from Calvary, the fear of the unknown. But I kind of want to do Gangs.
Do you want me to read to you what the...
Yeah, read the log line for Calvary.
After being threatened during a confession, a good-natured priest must battle the dark forces closing in around him. So it's kind of he starts as...
Kind of the opposite.
Yeah. And this movie is directed by John Michael McDonahue, so it's like almost the same
almost,
name.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're related. Oh, he's the brother... his brother is the playwright and filmmaker Martin McDonagh. So
there you go. Yeah,
that's his brother.
All right, fine. I'm throwing in Calvary because you probably would if I didn't.
I don't know. Maybe it's one of those movies that's been on my watch list for so long. I like it being my white whale. Going back to Moby Dick. All right.
Also, kind of want to do Gangs of New York finally because we've been circling that movie for so long.
Yeah, and I forgot Brendan Gleeson is in Gangs of New York.
Yeah, I did too.
Killing of the Sacred Deer has come up a bunch, like, this week. I, like, sort of want to do Shrek. Like, I sort of want to throw Shrek on that. I just don't know if, like, I guess, like, the things you talked about, like, the friendship, like, the reluctant friendship.
Yep.
Shrek is, I don't think he's supposed to be Irish. He's Scottish, right?
Yeah,
I think, Mike Myers?
He's a Scottish ogre, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, let's throw Shrek on there. Why not?
All
right. I think Shrek was probably nominated for, like, Best Animated the year it came out, I feel
definitely
like.
Definitely won, yeah.
Can you name who directed Shrek?
No, I cannot.
Yeah.
But
Andrew Adamson and Vicky Jensen.
Nice. I think Puss in Boots is now on Peacock, too.
True.
The new one, Last Wish. Last Wish just hit Peacock this week.
There you go. So you can do it. So we have two kids' movies and two darker movies. Two movies about death.
Indeed.
All right. Time for the streaming game. Shrek.
Yep.
Paddington 2. Brennan, where do you think it's
streaming? I believe is HBO Max.
Nowhere. It is on it's rentable. Sorry, nowhere. Okay, it's rentable. It is rentable. Okay. It's also on the TBS and TNT and True TV apps, but I'm assuming that has means. Ads. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, it's one of those movies that probably, they have reruns on those channels.
Yeah.
All right.
I would have to imagine Waking Ned Divine is not findable.
It is rentable. It is 20 cents less. It's $3.79 on Amazon to rent. I do not know why it's 20
maybe
cents
it's, maybe it's conversion. Maybe it's Irish money conversion.
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. And I am surprised that I don't see anybody who is like a any connections cast and crew wise between these two movies.
Yeah.
Calvary.
Yep.
Where do you think that's streaming?
Canopy.
Nowhere. I mean, again, sorry, not nowhere. Rentable. It's rentable. It is rentable.
It's rentable, but it's
also $3.79. So maybe you're onto something.
Yeah, I think maybe it's the conversion rate.
And it's also on the Cinemax app. Yeah. If you have Skinemax, you can watch it on there. And Shrek.
Shrek is DreamWorks Animation, right? So it's probably HBO.
Nope, Peacock.
Wow.
Peacock.
Oh, that's right. Peacock has all the DreamWorks
that's
stuff.
That's Universal.
Right. Yeah.
Peacock and Prime.
That's Universal. Okay. Yeah.
So the only one that's streamable is Shrek. Yeah. And if we do Shrek, I don't want to even ask. Shut up, Tim. I feel like he's probably podcasted that movie so many times.
I know.
I mean, we could ask him.
I think it, you know. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, do we really want to do Shrek is the question. Do we really want to do Shrek? People have seen it.
It's a fable.
Is there anything new to get out of Shrek is the question.
When was the last time you saw Shrek?
Like the original Shrek, the last time I actually sat down and watched the whole thing, probably like right after college.
Yeah, I mean, this came out in 2001. I probably have seen it maybe in like 2003. Also, yeah, I feel like there's probably some pop culture references. Like I know there's the Matrix kick in Shrek.
And I think maybe I watched it. Like maybe we watched it at the Brez one time, like late at night or something.
It'll also be interesting. I think it would also be interesting to see like that era computer generated animation versus now. It's a very busy weekend for me, March Madness wise.
That's also true. Why not pick an easy one?
Yeah, an easy one that like it's not gonna require a lot. The only one I'm sort of also thinking about is Calvary because of the brother connection of the directors. I think Waking Ned Divine we can take off because it's not easily streamable and there's not a ton of connections. And Paddington too, I feel like if we're gonna do, I mean, I don't know. I could see Paddington, but I just don't know if there's a lot of connections between Paddington 2.
No, there's not. I think we should do Shrek. I think it's the easiest one for us to knock out this week, especially with, you know, everything else that we have planned for this weekend. I think it'll be a fun one for the listeners. That'll just be fun to revisit or visit for the first time. It's a good one. Yeah,
cool. I think Shrek's good. And it's streamable on two different platforms. It's on Amazon Prime and on Peacock.
There you go.
Yep. Mike Myers, I think it's our first Mike Myers.
Mike Myers, Eddie Murphy, who else we got?
Cameron Diaz.
Yep. John Lithgow is the...
Vincent Cassell is Monsieur Hood. Monsieur Hood. We get what's his face in this?
Who's his face?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's in the sequel. John Cleese. I think he's not until the sequel.
Okay. So. Yeah, I think we'll have a lot of fun with Shrek. I'm cool with it. Yeah.
Mike Myers is in Inglourious Basterds.
Huh. Yes, he is.
Interesting.
Yep.
All right. Oh, Mike Myers is Canadian. But I think Shrek is supposed to be...
No, Shrek is Scottish. He's doing his accent from Still Unmarried and Axe Murderer. He's doing those characters. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Yeah. It's a very different one for us. I mean, look at...
Yeah, it'll be very different. It's a nice...
Just a month ago, we were doing On Golden Pond, and now we're doing
Shrek. Yeah, I know. Now we're doing Shrek. We went from On Golden Pond to Shrek in a month. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, Shrek lives on a pond.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I feel like every time we do an animated film, we say this is our first animated film. This is not our first because we did Apollo 10 and a half last year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We did do our first.
We did Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, and it's Rotoscoped. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Shrek.
It is Shrek. The connection is a reluctant friendship and a donkey friend. My what is it? Isn't it like my octopus friend? My octopus teacher.
My donkey friend.
Shrek coming up next week.
Exciting.
You can watch all. You can watch the whole Shrek franchise if you want, but we're probably not doing Shrek 2.
All right.
People can watch it with their kids. Maybe Kyle can show his daughter Shrek if she's never seen it.
There you go.
So, all right. That is what we're doing. Matt can show his kids Shrek, maybe. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know if it's like, is it the humor good for kids? I don't know.
I mean, some of it is probably definitely going over their heads.
Yeah, there's a lot of like booger humor and
there is a lot of booger humor in Shrek. Yeah.
All right. How many ways can we say we're doing Shrek?
Yeah, what, maybe, what are you maybe excited, we'll ask Shut Up. What are you excited for this weekend other than March Madness?
Other than March Madness, I need to watch Criterion. I'm a week behind on Criterion, so Le Samurai and Ghost Dog are my two like pairing, because you have to do like a double feature.
Yeah, I'm doing a double feature, yeah.
Yep, nice. And what are you looking forward to?
Let's see. Besides March Madness, watching Swing Time for Criterion. I'm actually ahead on Criterion.
Oh, nice.
I'm just going to keep being ahead on it. And then there's
Swing Time is very good.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch it for the first time. I've never seen it, so excited to. There's a new show on Amazon that I've seen the first three episodes of that I really, really like. It's a lot of, it's really cool, and I can't wait to watch the next three episodes. Daisy Jones and the Six on Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah, I've seen a podcast for that.
It's really, really fantastic. And then, of course, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you can catch me doing all the Mandalorian stuff on Post Show Recaps. We'll be back again this week. All right, what about anything else?
Who's your pick to win March Madness?
I have two different brackets, but the one for you, I have Alabama, because I'm gonna be an SEC homer and just go with Alabama.
Honestly, I have Alabama winning in mine. I have another one that I have UConn winning. Yeah. This is such
I have another one with I have another one with Kansas, just because I always pick Kansas in one bracket. So there you go.
I don't know this. I don't think Alabama is gonna win at all, but I don't know who's gonna beat them. So
exactly, yeah, that's the thing.
That's
I almost picked Houston until I listened to the One Shining podcast this morning, and they were like, well, they have this injury and this injury.
Yeah, they have
like,
a lot of injuries. Houston, well, okay, they're probably going to lose to Indiana.
Houston, problems.
Yes. It is really unfair that Alabama is now the number one seed in basketball, in addition to being so good in football. That's just ridiculous.
Well, it feels like it's been a long time coming for Alabama, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they've been building for
like
a while.
They've been building for a while.
And they got a top lottery pick despite his like legal troubles and
I'm sure our listeners are riveted that we devolved into basketball bracket talk, but
this podcast is long enough,
you know.
All right, well, with that, we will be back next week to do Shrek. I'm a believer. I don't know if that was even the song from Shrek 1 or Shrek 2.
Hey, now you're an all-star, get your game on, and the Hallelujah song.
So Gingerbread Man, Donkey. I remember Donkey being very funny. It will be fun to revisit. And I think this is my brother's first selection in a while, too. I can't remember the last time he had a movie picked. So congratulations to him. All right. We'll be back next week. For sure. I'm a believer and not a trace. All right.
Donkey will be a great title connection.
I will not leave my donkey outside when I'm sad. So I didn't really pull very many reviews from Letterboxd. That one unemployed friend at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday. Call and be like me and my best friend 10 minutes later. Can't stand her fake arse. And then here we go. From Justin Little Liberty. As a dull person, this hits pretty close to home.
Yeah. I think my favorite Letterboxd review is Sean Fennessy's, where he's like, this film is about me potting with CR.
With Chris Ryan. Yeah, I do. Like, that's a very like inside baseball.
It's
review,
a very inside baseball
think,
review.
I do think that's a good one. I know Sam Van Halgren, not a fan.
Yeah.
David Simpson, Martin's back. Disagree.
Yeah.
There
we go.
That is the movie. See you at the movies.
Yeah. See you at the movies.
All right. Well, see everybody next week for Shrek.
All right, cut the nets.